Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. If you are joining me for the very first time, welcome into the show. We're up over 350 episodes now. So this is rolling. I'm having a lot of fun. We're cranking out a lot of cool content. I have another awesome guest for you guys today. I'll bring in here in a second. But as always, and for those of you who are joining me again, welcome back to the show. Really appreciate you. So before I get started, same thing as always, please take a second to either subscribe to the show, rate and review it, anything you can do, a thumbs up, a like, share, anything wherever you're listening or watching this, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anything like that really, really helps the show grow, helps it get out into the algorithm, into the interwebs and grow and get into more people. So that is my little blurb to start with this. And today I'm going to bring you guys an interesting conversation. This is one that kind of blends a little bit of my background. I've never really talked about on the show, but I actually kind of had, I went into the world of cybersecurity briefly, kind of got a little degree in it, kind of dove back into this world of software development and doing different things on my own. So I have some experience in this and some knowledge in it, but definitely not as much as my awesome guest, who, by the way, goes by the name of Brittany Greenfield. She is joining me here today. Super, super excited to have her on and talk a little bit about this and how the, what does it mean for security to be included in software development? I don't really think I've had anybody on here to talk about this kind of stuff. So that's why I wanted Brittany to come on and join us. So welcome to the show, Brittany. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dan. Great to be here. I'm doing real well today and, really excited for this conversation. As we were talking about before, the world, you say a lot of you haven't had the chance to talk about this. And still, despite, DevSecOps being common nomenclature nowadays, we're still not having these conversations. So it's not just you. I think too often folks silo security from development. And when the application is the base layer of everything we do, we say all security is application security. So I think we need to foster more of these conversations. So thrilled to be here today.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start very generic. Like if I have software, if I'm building something, why is security important? I mean, obviously there's very common sense reasons or that type of thing, but why should I care about security?
Yeah. So the reality is while, the headlines we see on the front page are ransomware or firewall breach or, 181 days that they were living in the system, 9 out of 10 breaches begin due to defects in code. And that's why the application layer is so critical in any security strategy, not just an application security strategy. It's the foundation, right? This is where you are actually having a developer do this firewall configuration or make sure that they don't have a vulnerability, which is really just, a specialized kind of software defect, it built into the code that would compromise the data behind it. And this is why organizations have talked about this for so long, because they know that you can't really have a robust cybersecurity program if you're only relying on perimeter security, because that's the point when you get breached. Versus application security is saying, let's build this more securely, right? We don't build a house, tell everybody to move in and say, don't worry, we'll check and see if it's safe later, right? None of us would go into a building if we did that.
Yeah, like let's put locks on the doors after we moved all our stuff
in. Right, exactly. It's cool. Don't worry about it. And I always use the locks example, right? And this is part of the complexity of why organizations have not adopted this as part of their DevOps transformations, is that it's very, very nuanced to say, hey, not just do I have a lock on my door, but what kind of door is this and what kind of lock do I have? Is it residential or commercial? Is it my bathroom or is it my front door? You certainly wouldn't put a bathroom lock on a front door because somebody could pop that with a pin, and why even bother? And that's the level of nuance we deal with in actually deploying the security program into the software development lifecycle.
Yeah, very interesting. So, okay, I mean, I see that, right? Just when you're in a building mode, when you're in idea mode, I think this world has been glorified, the entrepreneurial world, the startup world. It's glorified.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just build things and launch things, and it's almost like this type of conversation kind of gets put in on the back burner. And if ever, revisited, definitely needs to be done, right? So, how do you see people integrate this? How do you tell people to integrate this when you're into that software development lifecycle.
Right. So it doesn't have to be complicated, right? But there are certain things, right? Developers have 99 problems and they need to know why security is one of them. And unfortunately, until sort of our current generation of DevSecOps, they were being given just longer laundry lists of things to do without context. And the big thing, like talking about that lock, that we need to know is what the context is. What do I have to actually do in this situation? Because it's not about fixing every vulnerability that's out there. The industry has accepted that you can really only fix about 5% of vulnerabilities that you have in a given month, but it's about prioritizing, right, what must be fixed now, what can be fixed later, and what just needs to be monitored in case our risk profile changes, whether due to an external or an internal change. And so that's what we have to really distill for the people that are responsible for implementing this, the developers, and make it really simple. Build it into that design phase. At Wombi, one of the things that we do is we just list out these specific policies as part of a feature description. And so they see you have to build a batch import dealing with PII. Wombi automatically populates the related policies. But the other thing that we do is say, hey, look, we get that there's no certainty, right? So maybe a policy might not work, like I need a 15-minute timeout because you're dealing with PII. Well, it's a batch import. And it's really about fostering those feedback loops for the developer to say, thanks for simplifying this, but this won't work. And then routing it to the person for a conversation. Okay, are we willing to accept this risk? Or is this such sensitive PII? We've got to come up with something now.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's like, you talk about this in my experience in like the marketing world of like, you have to speak someone's language. And once you learn that you're speaking their language, they can understand it, come to their level. It's like, oh, I get that.
Correct.
And it sounds like what you're doing there is you're going and you're talking developer speak of saying, well, just when you said it was like, when you're building something, you have to be like, what's a must have? What's a need to have? What's a nice to have?
Exactly.
And you kind of went with that nomenclature as well, right?
Exactly. And that is 100%. And it could be, so I talked about it on the design side. Think about our backlog prioritization, right? Vulnerabilities, as I said, they're just specialized. They're security defects. They're security bugs. So prioritize it for them as part of their existing backlog to say, this is why this has to get fixed, right? In the absence of information, we're all going to say, thanks, but no thanks, right? Hey, because you've got to justify why my time is valuable. And it's not just down to the developer. This has been a conversation going in between security and development for eons, right? Like not just in the world of DevOps. Why should I spend my developer's time on this? And you brought up something important about software development today, not just in startups, but in large enterprises, somewhere, and I largely blame Facebook, who popularized move fast and break things. Mm. And that's not what DevOps is about. It's about move efficiently and fix the right thing at the right time. And that's why we use the word velocity and not speed in development. Because sometimes slowing down means a faster end outcome. And more importantly, a more reliable end outcome.
Yeah. I mean, and that actually is a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to ask about this was, does this slow down the development process? It sounds like I kind of can guess you're going to say no, but I'm like interested to ask, does it tend to slow things down?
So it may slow it down at a specific point in the software development lifecycle, but overall it doesn't. And we actually did some research last year. We'll be publishing, I'll share it with you. Our current state of continuous security, our 2023 in review. And they actually found that the number one benefit of integrating security into the software development lifecycle is actually reduced project delivery delays. Right? Reduction in breaches. And it's because you're doing the right thing at the right time and you don't suddenly have a, hold on one second, why didn't you fix this from security? And then development goes, that's not fixing it. That's rebuilding it, right? That's an architectural decision. Right. Why didn't you tell me earlier, right? And then that's when it starts looking like a bad relationship conversation. So, if you look at it in the aggregate, it's not, right? This was the same pushback DevOps got early on to say, wait, why don't you just let me go do my thing and then we'll release twice a year and blah, blah, blah. No, we have this conversation internally. If it takes if there's something that you have to do twice, you automate it, and you take the time to have the guardrails in to make sure you don't have surprises at the end. And that's really what it is.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, all right. So you alluded to this a couple of questions ago, and I want to come back to it because you mentioned this funny sounding word, honestly, of Wobby, which is your platform. It's your solution, right? So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yep. So Wobby, and I'll give you guys a little trivia here. So we're a cybersecurity SaaS platform. We are in the application security posture management space, which I can dive into a little bit. But what that really means is we take an application security program and we orchestrate and automate it into the existing software development lifecycle. You hit on an important word for us. You talked about talking the two different languages. I often say we translate security from development and development back into security. So, you know, development gets that autonomy that they crave. Let me make an educated decision about what's good enough now and what we can do later. And then security gets that accountability to know, hey, I put up guardrails and somebody followed the process. And more importantly, when they didn't follow the process, the right risk acceptance process went on. I was notified, we signed off on it, or we blocked the build and then came to a different resolution. And so the trivia behind Wobby is, you know, we're sort of dealing in this world of gray, right? Security lives in this very binary world. Bad stop. Your antivirus doesn't say, hey, this was bad-ish. Maybe you want me to look into it later, right? It says, you have a problem with my policy, contact your IT administrator later, but I've stopped it for right now. Whereas development says, we're making sort of a best of decision right now. Mm-hmm. And that's where our name came from, to say, hey, the Japanese concept of wabi-sabi says, let us accept the imperfection in things as a step towards enlightenment. So we really help organizations accept the fact that software is imperfect and therefore you can't have perfect security by giving them that automated and orchestrated guardrails and the observability into it.
Yeah. When you bring in the Japanese and like, you know, piece into that, it makes sense. I was like, what is Wobby? That sounds very, very interesting, but very cool. Very cool. So, you know, I was taking a look at Wobby, and well, actually before I get to that, I want to go back a step. Like, so this is a very interesting, a connection. I mean, it's not like it's novel or anything, but it's very interesting that there's, you know, like you said, there's a lot of platforms or software out there that are not secure, not being built with security in mind. But then there's all like of these great security solutions, best practices, things like that, that are just out there waiting to be used. And there's like a perfect market for that, right?
Exactly.
Is that how this idea was born?
So it came even at I'm going to go one level deeper on that, right? So it's not that organizations haven't been thinking about developing secure applications. The two things happen. One, I like to call it a data to information problem. So security went out and said, look, you've got all these DevOps tools. I've now got tools to secure them. Fantastic. Well, that created two new problems. One, how do you actually make sure they're doing the right security configuration? Back to that lock, right? You're going to do lock example, right? You're going to do a different firewall configuration for your crown jewel application than you are for your like lunch or internal lunch ordering app, right? And so that's that context we talked about. So that's problem number one. The second problem is you suddenly were generating tons of data on the security side, but what do you do with it? And we talked about how, in a first pass of DevSecOps, you know, that would just sort of get tossed over the wall to development. Hey, you got all these vulnerabilities I needed to fix. And why, right? What's important and where do I get the most value for my effort? And that's that data to information problem I described. It's like saying, look, it's 36 degrees here today. I happen to be in Colorado. That is a warm day, and I wish it was colder. I say it's 36 degrees in Pittsburgh, and you're like, it is cold, all my heaters are on, right? Because it's contextually different. And so that's really where the idea came from, to say, first of all, we have all these tools that need to be integrated. They need to talk to each other, and they need to have a place. So we're a true platform, right? And I could get on my soapbox about a true platform versus just what everybody calls themselves nowadays. But we're a place where two parties that would not meet otherwise have the opportunity to connect. And that's that translation between security and development, because it is two different processes they're running. And then the other thing you need to do is add that context so you can actually create action out of the data. And that was the problem. We called it the DevSecOps hairball, where security did whatever, but they're always excited about. They think, I've got 13 tools for everything. And that's really what happened. And one of the reasons we've seen, I don't even want to call it a resistance, just a slow uptake in actually having security integrated. And that's what we were born of.
I might change the title of the episode to the DevSec hairball.
Yes, I love it.
That's awesome. Love it.
It is. I will share an image with you that I painstakingly crafted by hand with little lines showing what it looks like, just to give you that visual.
Yeah. But
this is where security is different. Application security, especially, it has a lot of mothers and fathers, so to speak. So it's not just the processes and the tools. Sometimes some policies may actually be responsible for being implemented by legal, or they have some kind of say in it. Does legal have any idea how software development works? Right. And does security know how legal works? No, but they just need to be notified that this risk happened, and therefore you need to know that it's there, right? That's it. So that's where you just have all these different components coming in, and it exceeds human capacity, right? We shouldn't be asking software developers to magically know what they should fix and why they should fix it. We shouldn't ask security professionals to also become development experts, right? There's a reason that they're specialists. So
interesting. Okay. So I was checking out some of the different things that Wobby, you know, does and says they do and whatnot. And there's this thing on there, and we'll share the link with you guys. If you're listening or watching, it'll be in the link in the show notes. But there's this thing you have called secrets management. And I was like, what the heck is secrets management?
So
what is that?
Secrets management. Have you ever gotten an error back saying this certificate isn't valid?
Yeah.
One of the reasons we talk about it is because it's a perfect example of how application security is more than just scanning and testing for vulnerabilities. That really application security is about the process. So secrets management, you might go, okay, my certificate, or you go to a website and Google says, don't go, the certificate's not valid, right? Mm-hmm. So the reason big organizations have this happen all the time is because there's a really complicated process. You have the policy. What do you do? When do you do it? Who's responsible for doing it? And more importantly, how do you control for it? And what happens when it isn't done? And so the secrets management part of that is, how do we manage that life cycle? Okay, so somebody has to, one, implement the certificate, whether it's new or old. Two, certificates, it's have a renewal period. Well, you can't just, organizations don't typically let certificates just be re-renewed, right? Hey, because that becomes a potential vulnerability, right? Hey, not something that's been found on the, you know, CVE side, but just if we keep using the same certificate. And so they'll have a different process for it. This certificate, which is a kind of secret, can only be renewed twice and can only be renewed for 1 year. So somebody has to be told that because it's part of the application. And then when the certificate gets renewed, who do you have to let know? Probably have to let ops know. You might have to let your website team know. You might have to let some customers know as well. And then you need to sign off on it. And by the time your certificate renewal comes up, chances are the person that renewed the last certificate isn't doing that renewal again, right? And so it really just is it's a beautiful little microcosm of the fact that application security, just like software development, has a life cycle. And life cycles are about processes, and they are supported by tools. And most importantly, you have to tell the people what to do.
Okay. Gotcha. That wasn't the answer I was expecting.
It's not as cool. But, it's not. We did do a launch video that was much more of the like Secret Agent Man video. But it is not as cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh, so this is where they have like all the Epstein documents, or like what's going on in here? You know what I mean?
Sorry to be a letdown. Trust me, I wish it was much sexier than that.
No, that's all right. That's all right. That's very cool. Okay, so a couple of specific questions for you. So, you know, we work with a lot of people that, you know, there's new platforms being built. Well, I use the word platforms. That's just what I'm used to saying, but there's a lot of new products being built, like, you know, where people can build applications, websites, things like that, from templates or pre-built things like that. Do those have inherent security risks, or are those kind of baked into what's already built with the platform?
So not just people building applications, right? This is the world of open source. And for a long time, people sort of had this falsely lulled themselves into a sense of, oh, well, we're all sharing these things. Therefore, it must be more secure. Because well, if we're all using the same things, then we must all care about the same security things, and somebody should just build it securely. False, right?
It's in everyone's best interest to keep it secure.
It is
the psychology, right?
Correct, that exactly. So that's why I should use shared libraries. The problem is, and this is why you do have the National Vulnerability Database, where everybody reports the vulnerabilities that they find, right? Hey, because they do understand, you know, working together, we can actually secure things better. The problem with that sense of, oh, I built it on a platform and I used some components, therefore I assume the vendor that provided them to me secured them for me. The problem with that is, what's secure to them may not be secure to you. And that goes back to that context we were talking about, which we had a customer who, a large enterprise customer, or dealing in industrial manufacturing, IoT and whatnot, and they have a shared component from, right? It's not just folks on small apps that use libraries from other folks, from a large software provider. And they said, you have a vulnerability in it. I need you to fix it. And they said, we don't care about it. And it was not a glib thing. So that's not a vulnerability to us. That's very specific to your use case. So it's really down on our list. And so they had to have that conversation. Do we pull out this component? Do we build our own patch around it, et cetera? And that's what they did. And so there's this, do not assume that your risk profile is the same as your neighbor's. And that's really what it is. And, you know, we talk a lot about this, calling it risk management by design. And this gets back to sort of the integrating. It's saying, what am I willing to, I can't do everything, right? What is most important for me? And you know, that's where you really have to think about what your security procedure is. And no company, how small they are, should it, you don't have to be highly regulated or anything. Basic things. Use MFA to log into your, right? That is not a standard in any of these web application things, right? That's something you have to turn on. Use that, right? So think about those little things as you are building your app. And it's not that you have to build perfect security. But, you know, this is also why you're more likely actually to see a small business attack. That's where most of the breaches and payouts come from, because they know that they let their guard down. They go, oh, well, my vendor took care of it for me.
Interesting. Very interesting response. Yeah, I was always been curious about that. So, okay. Another thing I wanted to ask you, I've been asking a lot of people about this because it seems to be the topic of 2023. Hopefully, you know, maybe not hopefully, but definitely moving into 2024 is AI, right?
Yep.
So this wonderful, awesome, vague term of AI, what are you seeing in terms of, is this impacting security? Is this helping security? Is it, I'm sure there's probably bits of both where, you know, yeah, AI can help us in this domain, but it can also really hurt us in this domain. And I'm sure there's kind of a mixture of both, but, and this is a very general, vague question, I guess, but you know, what are you seeing in terms of this?
You know, so AI and cybersecurity is nothing new because of that, the large data sets that cyber has always generated. It's always been a really fertile testing ground for AI. So I don't think it crept up on our industry quite as much. But what did creep up was really the ChatGPT. And we even had to roll out policies very quickly. You are not to put our source code into ChatGPT, right? Mm. On a much more basic level, Everybody loves those headshot AI generators. Make sure you read the terms and conditions, because those AI generators now own your picture forever. So you're seeing on the cybersecurity front, it's causing issues across a couple of different lenses. One, on the fraud perspective, it's easier for AI to make a fake Dan, whether it's your voice or your picture, or you could pretend you were someplace else, or, you know, and so there's that sort of, the term is friendly fraud. You know, you call me and say, oh my God, Brittany, I'm stuck in France and can you wire me this? And it looks like you, and it looks like you're in France and it sounds like you. So that's one place. So it's just, that's a new frontier, right? Because it's so easy. The second is actually in the vulnerability a creation and response side. And, you know, and that's where, you know, the problem, how the problem manifests itself isn't different. You have your adversaries who are dedicated to identifying a specific exploit, right? Hey, that is their job. Whereas you're sitting there going, I have a bunch of opportunities for them to come in. Where do I focus my resources? And so ChatGPT, we saw as soon as it became popular, the number of vulnerabilities identified, ways to attack through vulnerabilities escalated like overnight. So this is really about now the adversaries have it too. And then the third is that policy side. It's new to everybody, right? This is one of the unique things that, so there aren't really a ton of experts in the security policy side. So how do you make sure that your front line, really your employees, aren't making poor decisions in relation to AI, right? I talked about the photo generator, right? That could be a way that somebody could get into somebody's system, right? Hey, they could pretend to be, forget calling me and asking for a wire transfer. They could call the IT ops person and sound just like Dan and say, I've lost my pass key. Can you let me in? Right. So it's going to start escalating that way. So now that I've done the doom and gloom, let's talk about the positive. You know, where AI can really help, and we see the requests for it all the time in the AppSec space. Look, there's a massive global cybersecurity talent shortage. 3 million people and counting, right? It's not going to go anyplace because the need for cybersecurity only grows with the increased use of technology. Unless we all shut off our computers, that's only going to continue to grow. And so that shortage has generated two problems. One, you actually have a high turnover because you burn your people out, right? And the second is you also generate a lot of manual work because you don't have the resources to automate the work. And this is where AI is really going to be a force multiplier in the cybersecurity industry to say, hey, you know, it's what we were just talking about, some of what we do, right? Hey, don't worry about shifting through that list of vulnerability scans. Wobby knows that, you know, these are the five most critical ones that have to get fixed because we're using our AI, and we're going to help you build a better report to understand what your posture is. And that's really where the security professionals will get more efficacy in the tools that they do use. So it's not all doom and gloom, but AI without a doubt is right now, we've got to focus on the productivity will come, right? It's the same thing with ML and everything. We've got to focus on good common sense around it. And I think that's the conversation we're having now, right? Don't rush into AI just to do it. Companies that have been doing AI have been doing AI for a long time, right? Like, hey, you don't need to talk about it to say you're doing it.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I think there's, I mean, it's just like anything, you know, there's going to be positives, there's going to be drawbacks. Exactly. It's really interesting to hear that, like, that social engineering aspect has been just become so much easier. Cause I know, like, when I was taking a course recently and they talked about how you could just make any voice, you could just type in the text that you want it to sound like, and it'll sound like The Rock, or it'll sound like Kevin Hart or whoever you want it to. And it sounds exactly like them.
Exactly. So you heard dead people sing covers, right? And you're just like, they had Tupac sing some cover of something else. You're like, these things couldn't. And then on top of it proliferates around the web. We have other sort of systemic issues. It proliferates around the web so quickly before somebody can catch it, right? And you thought like the fake reports of people being dead was bad. Wait until you actually have the picture or somebody's voice has that makes it sound validated. And yeah, it's just the social engineering. This is something that, you know, you typically, I think the biggest issue with AI now and why it's so front of mind is it happened so quickly. Everybody knew it was coming, but it just sort of overnight. Flip side is the other thing is, though, it's super buggy. I put into Adobe Firefly. I wanted a picture of a female CISO in line with our brand guidelines. And because it relies on what's on the internet, it came back, this is a separate commentary, with a picture of a man's body, a woman's face, because there aren't a lot of pictures of female CISOs. And so if an alien landed and you said, this is what a female CISO looks like, pardon me, a woman's body in a man's face, right? That's what it was, right? And and so it's super buggy, and I think let's be cautiously guarded, but optimistic.
I get that. No, I remember I was playing around with it. I mean, this was probably a year ago, last summer sometime. And I tried to get it to make like a little picture of like a taxidermist type mount. Yeah. And it showed a squirrel with like an eye that was like this big, and it was like rainbow colors. And I was like, holy crap, what's going on?
Yeah.
Okay. So just off the wall, kind of, I didn't prepare you for this question at all, but I'm really interested in, and maybe this will be silly and you'd be like, why did you ask me this? But this was a movie on Netflix recently that took the world by storm. It was number one for a while, Leave the World Behind. Have you seen this movie?
I have not seen it yet, but it is on my list.
Do you know what it's about? Premise.
Yes.
Could it happen in real life?
Anything can happen, right? You know, I mean this seriously, and I'm sure you caught the news about Elon Musk's the chip, I'm like Neuralink. Right? That was a foreign movie concept to us until this morning, right? Yeah. Hey, you had, I'm sure you've seen Kingsman.
I have not seen that. I've seen
the highly recommend, yeah. But short version is Samuel L. Jackson plays a very wealthy mega billionaire that controls the population with chips in their brains.
Right. Okay.
And not to say that that is the intention of Neuralink, but you know, art imitates life. And I think the reason that you're probably asking this question is that it used to be 100 years between when we'd see something futuristic, right? You know, journey. Yeah, right. Hey, now it's like, I just saw that on a movie. Wait, is that a movie that's coming out, right? We're getting so much closer because is our technology, we innovate in technology faster. So yeah, 100%, right? I'm sure it will. And it's why I'm building a bunker. No.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's true. I mean, I remember even there was one, I forget what it was, one day my wife and I were watching, there was some kind of, it was like a show that came up, and it was about how the Hollywood executives or like Hollywood had learned to take AI and basically replicate, the likeness and the voice of actors and actresses.
Yep. I don't they know if did you that saw for Harrison Ford in, the new Indiana Jones to make him younger at the beginning.
Okay. I haven't seen that one yet, but yeah. And, but then like, that was the thing. And then the recent strike that happened was, there was one of those, that was one of the issues with it.
Right.
And it was just like, wow, that was just a movie. And now it's almost like a Matrix type of like thing of like, oh my gosh, we just saw it over here. And now we're like, are we in the Matrix? Are we not? And it's like really weird, isn't it?
It is. And I would argue we're in the Matrix. It just doesn't look like Keanu Reeves and us bending over things, but we are. And you know, one of the things I know, right. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong, but you start to see just basic technology breakdown in the movie, right?
Which one are we talking about?
Leave the World Behind.
I believe it's you know, like power goes out, that
right,
kind
power
of stuff,
goes out, right? So you know, one, we could actually do that. I talk about the likelihood of it. This could all happen overnight, right? And apologies, speaking of technology, I still have a landline because in the mountains we don't always have reliable coverage. And I'm sorry. And give me a second. I assume you can post edit this out.
That's okay. We can barely hear it. It's your
perfect. Yeah. All right. So in Leave the World Behind, right? You see these systems break down. We could actually wipe out the entire grid of the things that we use every day, right? You could argue that maybe I haven't watched it yet because I know too closely how this could happen, right? It's very, very easy. It's been well written about. You know, you do, it doesn't always hit the front line, but you do hear about every now and then power outages due to cybersecurity breaches. You may remember
the East Coast blackout.
The East Coast
blackout. I remember that as a kid.
Exactly. And you know, these things, and we become so reliant on them. You know, even I drive out here, 96 Ford Explorer, but even that has a mechanical, an electronic component in it, right? I might go, I can barely get it started. What do you mean it has an electronic component in it? So you get some kind of EF wave and that's gone too. I can't even escape the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, you know, it's this reliance. It's this reliance that we have on everything. People can't read maps anymore, right? Yeah. People don't know how to dial a phone anymore or even know their phone numbers. And I think that's sort of the scary thing there. And no, but you're talking about, you know, reading about the AI with your wife, you know, I'll frame the idea of that. Could this happen again in a different way? In evolution, right? Anything that's good has evolves twice, right? So if a good idea comes up, you see this in pharmaceutical development too, right? Typically you have two companies that will come up with the same novel idea around the same time, right? Because the research is right at the same time, whatnot. So if an artist can come up with an idea, why can't somebody else that's actually very creative, because most adversaries are very creative, come up with that idea? Because it's, whether it's good for society is a different question, but it's an idea that can be truly evolved. So that's why I think we sort of see this art imitating life or life imitating art, because it's two very valid ideas.
Well, just as we usually conclude with a lot of other episodes, you know, it really comes down to the human component, especially in security as well too. So, well, anyway, we kind of sidetracked there, but it was kind of fun, honestly.
That was a great question. I love it. Like I said, I'm a little afraid to watch it because I'm going to go, oh my God, I know how that can happen. I often joke. So I didn't come from a cybersecurity background originally. People were like, once I got it, they're like, you must be so secure. And I'm like, absolutely not. The fact that I haven't taken my cash out of the bank and stuffed it in my mattress.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome. All right. Well, before we sign off, let's go back to Wobby. Where can we go to check this out?
Yep.
How can we get more information on
this? Yep. So absolutely. Visit us at www.wobbysoft.com. If you're interested in learning more about how you can bridge the gap between security and development. And then also please don't hesitate to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Let me know you heard me here on Dan's podcast and what you want to chat about. I love hearing what's concerning people and always happy to meet a new person. This is where technology does its job of connecting people that may not ever find each other. So please don't hesitate. I'm easily findable on LinkedIn as well. But Dan, this has just really been a pleasure and I'm looking forward to the next time.
Yeah, absolutely. This was awesome. So for those of you, we'll put the link in the show notes here below, but it's also spelled, it's Wobby, W-A-B-B-I. So
correct.
Wobby. Okay.
Yep.
So yeah, awesome. Thank you very much. This was Brittany Greenfield, founder and creator of Wobby and cybersecurity extraordinaire. So thank you so much for joining. Really appreciate it. It's awesome. We learned a lot and I look forward to next time. Absolutely. So
talk soon. Take care.
All right, everyone. That is it for this episode. Appreciate you joining again. Please like, rate, subscribe to the show. Check out Wobby, the Wobby website down below. And I will see you guys in the next episode. Talk then.